Welcome to MGO Podcast 11.19. My previous intro was vetoed by my podcast members because it was too awesome. I wanted to do a gimmicky top five of our least important personality flaws, but you guys don't want to do that. Is it because, like, your least important personality flaws are pretty important, or what? I don't know what the deal is.
Does anyone care?
I don't know. Maybe people care. I buy too much mustard.
Yeah, we talked about this in prep, and that's not a character flaw.
It is a character flaw.
I did not think about this at all before heading in, so I just have, like, no strong feelings one way or the other.
About what?
I guess I haven't really thought through whether my minor character flaws are that major. I probably should.
Clearly, on the top of Brian's list is that he spends frivolously condiments. You have 8 jars of mustard, Brian.
7.
You had 8 jars of mustard.
Yeah, so they did one of those, like, buy 5 and they're, like, half off things. And I bought 5 and I came home and I was like, I already have 3 things of mustard.
So you just previously had done the same thing, got two of them, and then reloaded?
You know, I go to the store and I'm like, I like mustard.
And you like deals, clearly.
Yes.
So this was just an unfortunate combination of the two.
You don't make lists before you go to the store?
I had to, like, clear out an entire extra shelf for food storage because I bought too much mustard. I had to move around things. You have a insignificant personality flaw. You don't like stopping for pedestrians.
I don't like crosswalks at every corner that I have to stop at that people can just cross whenever they feel like
it. You gotta share the road, man. You gotta share the road. Speaking of sharing, Michigan shared a home game with Rutgers.
That was pretty good, actually.
Strong transition.
That was good.
If I shared a home game, you mean that was probably like 65-35 Rutgers fans
in
there.
Yeah, so people are pretty mad about it. Well, one.
You thought it would be different.
Well,
you said all along this was a good idea.
Well, it would have been a good idea if Rutgers was like 4-20, right? Because, like,
Ace is
nice record choice.
What does that mean? Some sort of
I'm
going to
let you figure that out later, I guess. I didn't know I was the only one who knew the other internet number.
Got some air quotes going on over here.
Very visual podcast.
So in the end, it was not a good idea?
Michigan wins 69-63. So we've worked in both internet numbers.
Yeah. By the way, the official stats from this game are just wrong.
Okay. Like, do you mean spiritually?
No, I mean, like, the stat broadcast box score that I just downloaded says the final score was 73-72, which was not the case.
There were, like, people at the game. Like, I think Ethan Sears was tweeting out wrong scores the whole time.
Yeah, and there were people saying, like, the stats here are just off. Apparently, they never corrected that, even though the game's been over for a while.
Okay.
So, I'm going to close the official box score now.
Yeah, let's do that.
It's not going to help.
But we should finish actually talking about the neutral site game versus Rutgers.
Yes, yes.
Now that that's in the past and Michigan won it, it's actually a good thing for their tourney hopes.
It's true. This was a quadrant one win.
So.
Foresight.
I mean. And when they scheduled the game, they probably just thought, okay, well, we're going to have the whole arena because Rutgers is going to be Rutgers. And they could not predict that Steve Steve Peichel, who looks like a vacuum salesman, is going to, like, lead the renaissance of Rutgers basketball. And I get that point of view.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's difficult to anticipate the Rutgers renaissance. You know, it happens once century.
That, like, I think someone on Twitter said that they told people about this after tickets were renewals due. So
it's like that hockey thing.
That's not great.
Yes.
Where they moved the Michigan State game to Soldier Field.
They pulled the Dave Brandon. Yeah.
Well, Michigan basketball fans probably not hanging on to the Rutgers game as, like, a staple of their
You just want to know
home
what
game
you're
experience.
Buying.
Yeah, you'd like to know when when a home game is not going to be at home.
Yeah.
So what about if they flipped it next year and Rutgers' home game is at MSG?
Well, Rutgers is having a home game at MSG. It's just against Michigan State.
Yeah, because Michigan State actually figured out the smart way to negotiate that, which is if you're the one having to take a plane and the other team can drive there, then maybe it should be their home game.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the part of this that never made any sense to me.
The thing is, like, driving from Rutgers campus to MSG probably takes as long as getting into the plane.
That's true. But, like, I don't know. Like, there's something about flying that kind of takes something out of you, I think.
Yeah, I guess.
So, in hindsight, yay. But coming up to it, it was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, well,
I mean, when this game tightened up late, I was ready to be very upset.
I kept thinking about like the three pick six turnovers that Michigan provided 6 points.
Those were also suboptimal.
Those were bad.
Those were real bad. I was upset about those too.
I was deleting six of Rutgers' points from the scoreboard, and I enjoyed that score much more than I enjoyed the actual score.
Yeah, seeing like your two upperclassmen guards just toss these super lazy passes to initiate plays was fun.
Especially when you can see the defender reading it.
And especially like after the first time it happens.
Yeah, when it happens once, it's like, okay, like you got lazy for a play. Like it's hard to stay locked in for 70 possessions a game. But, you know, when it happens the second and third time, maybe lock in, dudes.
Yeah. So this was the exact opposite of the Illinois game, where Illinois, Michigan has two turnovers. They have five more offensive rebounds than the opponent, and they lose. Rutgers had 26 offensive rebounds. Michigan turned it over 16 times, and they won this game. Because finally, the opponent didn't shoot 60 billion percent from three. Although it started out like they were gonna.
In the second half, they didn't. In the first half, they did.
They started out 5 for 8, and they got guys who I've never even heard of canning two in a row. And I'm just like, this guy's a grad transfer from where?
Rutgers had 36 more field goal attempts at Michigan in this game.
I mean, part of that is they only had like three field goals. Free throws.
Yes, there's a 24-5 attempt gap in free throws. So that was nice for Michigan.
At one point, Rutgers had more misses from the floor than Michigan had attempts from the floor. Like it was like 26-23 at halftime. I think it was at halftime.
And only some of that was due to that one first half possession where they really just played volleyball on the glass and still didn't manage to get it to go
down. I want to talk about that in specific because if you're going to give up a bunch of offensive rebounds, you should give them all up on one possession.
That is the way to do it. Unfortunately, even when you eliminate that possession, Michigan gave up 21 offensive rebounds.
I was going to have like a really good point about how the offensive rebounding wasn't as bad as it seemed. Because five of them came on one possession, and now you can get rid of those five, and it's like...
It takes it down from, like, they rebounded 46% of their misses to, like...
40?
Yeah. It's still pretty ugly.
But that did have play a factor.
Yes.
The other thing that played a major factor is Rutgers looked like Rutgers of 3 years ago when they shot, where most of their shots, and I'm saying most of their shots... We're so bad that like you can get in reasonable rebounding position and it just doesn't matter. We're talking about shots that don't even hit the top of the rim.
Yeah, that was the other thing is that like absurd first half possession was mostly the exception and that all of those shots came from close to the rim and had a decent chance of going in.
Right.
The rest of the jump shots were just a oof.
But it reminded me of Rutgers. We played them, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago at Chrysler and it, just every possession was Geo Baker flinging up something.
Or that Sanders dude.
I don't even remember who that is.
He was Geo Baker before Geo Baker.
Okay. But in this game, there were many different guys playing Geo Baker. As Michigan's defense had a return to form, to early season form, where virtually everything Rutgers was putting up was heavily contested and a bad shot.
Every starter had a block.
Really?
Yes. Teske had two, and every other starter had one.
That is true.
Eli Brooks's was more of a strip than a block.
Oh, did they count that as a block?
I think so.
Okay. Because, yeah, I don't...
He was going, you know, he was in the upward shooting motion, and Eli Brooks got his hand on it, so I guess we're calling that a block.
I don't think it can be a block if it's not over the guy's, like, chest.
You know, we're great. Maybe they're grading on a scale when you're 6'1".
6'1", with quotation marks.
Yeah.
With hair.
Well, I mean, one thing that this game kind of brought to the forefront is Michigan's backcourt is so small. So DeJulius only gets 6 minutes in this game, and I think that's largely because, you know, the three-guard lineup was not viable.
Like, yeah, because your third guy would be guarding a 6'6", 230-pound forward.
And I'm looking forward to Michigan having more size in their backcourt, which they will next year. I mean, Zeb 6'3". Hopefully Josh Christopher is 6'4".
He is, but hopefully he's on Michigan.
Yes, yes. I'm not hoping that Josh Christopher is 6'4". I'm aware that he is.
And also, you know, this is another game where not having Glivers eliminates some flexibility.
Oh,
and,
my God. Yeah.
Yeah, that becomes an issue.
And then the other thing that kind of leapt out about the offensive rebounding is there was one where Wagner found his guy. And it was like, all right, I'm going to box him out. Boxed him out. Ended up under the basket.
You know, Camp Sanderson is something he needs again. And Rutgers, this is just you can see why they're a total pain in the ass to play for everybody.
Yes.
Because normally they shoot a little bit better than this, at least from inside the arc.
Yeah, a little bit.
There's just so much length on defense. They're like that one thing, you know, I wasn't surprised that Michigan had an elevated turnover rate in this game, even when you exclude some of the lazy passes. Because they're just, they're really good at denying stuff. They're really good at kind of clogging up the paint. And since they're so long, they can still recover to shooters a little bit.
You're not going to get this reference at all.
No, I'm not.
But
I can already tell.
Rutgers reminds me of what happened to Michigan's hockey team after they put Sean Hunwick in goal. So they put this like 5'8 walk-on in goal. And all of a sudden, they're like, every shot, this would turn out to be the worst call in the history. Like, because he was the best goalie in Michigan history by save percentage terms. But they were so terrified of every shot, so they became a really good defensive team overnight. And it feels like Rutgers is like, we can't do anything. So we need to be locked in the hyper.
Well, and they've always been versions of that under Pickheil. But
wasn't it something else earlier?
It was something.
He has a lot of names.
Pikiel,
I think is what they say.
Pikachu.
Pikel.
There we go.
It's Pikel.
Pikel.
They've always been a version of that under Pikel. But this year, they've like really ramped that up. And the offense is like, and now that they've ramped that up and have that, including like one of the best offensive rebounding numbers in the country, that boosts their offense to a point that it hasn't been in about a decade, maybe longer. So,
That's how they do it.
It's an extreme Rutgers team.
Yes.
In a good way.
It's more Rutgers than Rutgers.
They're at least interesting.
They are interesting. What if they had Omar Rui?
They'd be really interesting.
Who transferred to Oregon. He's sitting out this year.
Yeah.
He's going to have 1 year at Oregon as a not grad transfer. And he could be on this Rutgers team. What a weird... I don't know, man.
Bizarre situation. But, you know, when you have weird situations like that, you start getting into, maybe that was addition by subtraction in a locker room sense. I don't know.
I don't know.
Whose buddy was he? He played with somebody.
Whose buddy was
he? No, a Michigan player. They played against each other. Was he Iggy? Didn't they play against Iggy?
Yeah. They're both Canadians.
Yeah.
Anyway, we should drill down to some individual performances, obviously headlined by Brandon Johns, who puts up 20.
Yep.
Career high?
Yeah, career high. He gets a couple of open corner threes in the opening, I don't know, 10 minutes?
Yeah, 10 minutes-ish.
Knocks them both down. Does not do what he did against Michigan State, which you made a post about, where it's just like he's hesitant, he's not going to take that shot. If he got a good shot, it went up and it went down. What was it, 5 of 7 from 3, 4 of 6?
4 of 7.
4 of 7. All right, well, pretty close.
Yeah. If you would combine those two guesses, you were right on.
And he's up to 34% on the season, so... And he was a mid-30s guy in high school, so this could be...
And these shots look good. That's the other thing, is he's draining these, and even the ones that miss, you know, that they're not missing by a ton. The form looks good. When he's not hesitant, he looks like a very viable shooter.
And then he has the putback right at the end of the first half.
That was quite nice.
He has the tomahawk jam after Simpson finds him running in the lane.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had one, take where he had a hook shot, and he got so far off the ground on the hook shot that, I mean, he just flashes what an athlete he is from time to time, and you're like, can we mine that more consistently? And this is two good games in a row for him. I kind of feel like there's going to be a lull here, but
yeah, I mean, given the course of the season, but I'm encouraged by like the Nebraska breakout was more predictable because they're a small team.
Yeah.
But this was a much better team and a much tougher defensive team and a much bigger team in that he was able to have that level of performance against that combination of factors is pretty encouraging. And he's also been very active on the defensive end. He had a pretty emphatic block in this game and a couple of steals too.
He's had some low post moves throughout the course of the season in terms of like against different teams. So you can kind of see this coming, but the last couple of games, like you guys were talking about, is it's starting to build and it's becoming more and more possessions in game instead of just like, okay, he has an ISO here and a bucket. Okay, that's nice. And then maybe one in the second half. And now it's like, oh, this is becoming a semi-consistent option on offense.
Yeah. And honestly, that putback is one of the more important things that happened. Like the shooting on the outside is probably the most important, but he's a guy who's like GR3 where he can get you extra possessions. He can do work without the ball. And like every team, if they're going to be a really good team, I feel like needs one guy.
You need somebody who's productive who you're not running plays for.
Yeah. You need someone to clean stuff up and get you garbage points and stuff like that. And I think Johns is Michigan's best bet. He's certainly Michigan's most athletic player this year.
Yeah. I mean, other than running double drag screen stuff where he's, I mean, the pop option on that, but not necessarily the primary guy. There's very little that they're running where he's anything other than the screener.
No, but and then he added himself as a cutter on that dunk.
Yeah.
And like that's the kind of stuff that GR3 was really good at that I don't think anybody really appreciated at the time. But like he can become more of a rim runner. And obviously when that happens, he's pretty good at finishing.
Yeah.
And he's also a good free throw shooter. So we had that incident at the end of the first half where Austin Davis has a dunk that he gets fouled on and then bricks both free throws. Like having a rim runner be able to hit free throws is important. So,
yeah, this was Johns' most encouraging game yet, I would say.
Also pretty encouraging, Franz Wagner.
Yes.
We mentioned him getting shoved under the basket, which is going to happen because he's skinny. But he also had a post move in this game where he took it in from the perimeter, you know, pivoted, got to the lane, got one of those floaters, which is a totally different ball game when he's shooting it than Eli Brooks is.
Yeah, because the shot's coming from above the rim.
Yes. Little bit better situation. He got an and one on that. He had a second take to the basket where he set up Johns for one of his threes. And
he had two absolutely gorgeous, I mean, that was one of them, two gorgeous skip passes. One of them didn't get converted, but that was point guard level vision.
A lot of people have been complaining about his assist rate, but I kind of feel like that's not his fault. Like he's setting people up and the shots just aren't falling.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been a noticeable uptick in him driving to do something other than score of late.
Yeah.
So, I'm not surprised that his assist rate is low throughout the course of the season, but it's definitely been improving recently, and it seems like that's part of him getting, and it's come in conjunction with him scoring more efficiently off the drive, too. I think he's just getting more comfortable, and now that he knows that he can get his, he's looking to do more.
Yeah. Well, he's doing a better job of not getting the ball raked out by guys who are digging down on him from the perimeter.
Yes.
That was a huge problem earlier in the year, and now he's more aware of it. So you see some hesitation there. So the guy has his dig and then goes back to the three-point shooter, and that's when he goes to the basket. He's also, you know, got the Barry Sanders 5 points of contact through the last two steps kind of going a little bit more. So he obviously needs more bulk so he can finish through guys, but, you know, those moments in games when a guy like Dan Dackett says that guy's a pro, you see it. You know why that's happening. And we'll talk maybe more about this in the Nebraska game, but he's had a couple of encouraging games in a row, especially when Michigan needed someone to score.
Speaking of needing somebody, Austin Davis, 8 points off the bench, 4 for 4.
Yeah, three of those were dunks off pick and roll, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was just Rutgers not being able to handle in the first half that double drag screen action.
Well, I mean, they came out and they were like, okay, we're not going to let Xavier Simpson in the lane. We're going to hard hedge everything.
Yeah.
And then when Simpson was able to get around the hard hedge a couple of times, that was dunks for him and Teske. And that was a trade-off they were making. The trade-off was, I think Simpson goes 1 of 4 from two.
Yes.
So, like, they made a choice, and there were downsides to it at points, but also they shut off Simpson getting to the basket except for one time.
And also forced him into 6 turnovers.
Yeah.
But he's also been not too bad on inside this year.
He did have, like, a pretty post finish in there as well, which is something that we just did not see from him ever
before.
Think
was possible.
Yeah. So, and I mean, and he's clearly surpassed Colin Castleton at this point as the more trusted backup big option, just because the rebounding doesn't go totally to hell when he's in the game.
And there's, I mean, I thought Castleton would be beefy enough this year to hack it. Clearly not the case yet.
Needs another year.
And so now you kind of have a decision to make. Like, looks like scholarships are going to be pretty tight. We've all been assuming that Austin Davis is going to get a firm handshake after this year. I still think Colin Castleton has a lot more upside.
Yeah, I think unless Castleton transfers, that's probably still going to be the way this plays out.
Yeah, yeah.
But it has become more of a discussion than we expected it would, in it's a discussion, and we did not ever expect it would.
He's not a terrible offensive player, which it was seeming like he was that the first couple of years, because he couldn't really even catch like passes.
Yes, that's true.
And now he's catching the ball and finishing pick and rolls, but he's also, you know, has had some ISOs on the post that he's finishing. I mean, Ace was referencing a low post finish, but one of them was, I think, even a reverse layup, which, you know, it's not necessarily something I was like, oh, I expect to see that from Austin Davis on a game-by-game basis.
In my lifetime.
He's absolutely no lift. He's kind of a problem defensively.
Well, yes. The other end of the court is completely different.
Yes, and that's where it's just a matter of, like, it would also be about this bad with Castleton, so we might as well have the guy who's playing more reliably on the other end.
And also rebounds better.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, a weird game where you have basically a six-man rotation here. Because, I mean, we talked about DeJulius only getting 6 minutes in this game,
right,
because
Nunez
can't play three guards. Adrian Nunez plays 2 minutes that are not...
That are typical for the genre.
Okay, yeah, let's leave it at that.
What? I'm being nice.
Yeah, I mean, there really is nothing...
to say.
Positive to say.
Oh, I was hoping there wasn't going to be an adjective, but there was.
We'll let you know when the situation changes.
Yeah. I don't know if I have much else to say about this game.
Well, we should mention the passing sequence that led to John's corner three.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was erotic.
Yeah. And as soon as it gets to John's, you're like, you have to make this.
Just, yeah.
You got to make this.
It's like when you cross somebody over and they fall over and then you have the jump shot. And it's like you have to hit this or like throw the ball out of bounds. You have two choices, like stop the game entirely or make this shot. You cannot miss it.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about Nebraska ball.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use HomeSure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. complicated loan. Brian used them. You should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Why do you do what you do? I grew up in the small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed great people I care about making a lot of poor financial decisions. I thought to myself, I never want to be in that position, putting my retirement at risk. Now we want to make sure that your retirement is not at risk. And by providing education and guidance, we inspire our clients to make great decisions, putting them on a path to be able to retire with confidence. I'm Nick Hopwood, CFP President and Founder at
Peak Wealth Management.
And that's my why.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
So Michigan's previous game was a win at Nebraska by 11, in which Nebraska shot 43% from three. And they were like 54% 30 minutes into this game, and it was a close game. And I was trying to like look up the phone numbers of various gods that control randomness and yell at them. They don't have listed phone numbers.
No.
Do they have phone numbers?
I assume so.
Okay.
Phones are very convenient.
I see. For deities?
They're probably using burners so that, you know, well, people like you can't get in touch with them.
Probably, oh, jeez.
You think that's really the problem? Like, that's why they're...
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. It's definitely the problem.
So this was a game Michigan played without Xavier Simpson. One game suspension. Michigan goes with DDJ and Eli Brooks at the point. And the interesting thing to me is that Brooks was the guy who was initiating the offense. So they were playing DDJ essentially as a two guard, and I thought maybe that would have been inverted.
Yeah, no, that was definitely interesting to see, as well as like they initiated a ton of offense, especially in the first half through Franz Wagner too.
Yeah.
That went interestingly.
He had a lot of turnovers. He was 1 of 6 from three, and he was 7 of 10 from two.
And he had one assist. He probably should have had more.
Yes, because this is another game where it's like, why don't the shots go down?
Yeah, Michigan shoots 29% on threes. Yeah.
What?
But Brandon Johns made his only attempt, so there was that.
I mean, right. No one was going to check Wagner in this game, right? Like, there were a number of times that Michigan could get the ball inside, and you were like, well, that's probably going to be a bucket, and if it's not, it's going to be a putback.
Wagner was taller than everybody but their center.
Yeah. And then that should tell you what you need to know about
starting center. He was as tall as their backup center.
Their starting center is also like 17. He's a 17.
He's not good.
French kid.
Yeah,
he shouldn't be playing college basketball right now.
No, I mean he's like a huge project.
And he has an unpronounceable last name.
Woodrago?
What Woodrago?
I mean, there's. He bought so many extra vowels, man. I don't know which
a
ones
lot of
to pronounce.
He stole them from Kent Herbeck.
That's six vowels.
1980s Minnesota Twins reference for
you.
He's a home run hitter.
Collected baseball cards is the only reason I had any idea where that came from. But their backup center was something. The Brasses.
Oh, God, that guy.
Because this dude who's a 29% three-point shooter on the year goes 3 for 5, almost has a fourth one where he steps back, but his foot's on the line.
All of them are jacks. None of them are catch and shoot.
I think there were people like, Teske needs to step out, and I was like trying not to like rip pillows apart in my living room.
I don't
my bare hands.
I don't even know him anymore. Maybe he did need to step out.
I don't know.
I think he needed one more bucket to set his career high.
I mean, you're right that would have been stupid. But also, we're cursed. So,
this is a stupid situation that we're in, so maybe it requires stupid responses. But
there's
a weird thing where, and then you also have Cam Mack going 5 for 7 from beyond the arc in this game, which is above average for him. but
since they're Nebraska, shooting 43% on a bunch of threes only gets them an 11-point loss.
Yeah.
Because they have no size. Michigan went after the offensive boards a lot more than they usually do in this game to good effect. So nice to see Juwan look at a team that didn't have Simpson that had a pretty good chance of exploiting a weakness in the opposition and going and doing so.
Kind of like Rutgers game plan. Chuck it at the rim and get the offensive rebounds.
Yeah. Except, you know, Michigan was shooting open catch and shoot threes. So
that weren't falling anyway.
A little bit different than what Rutgers was doing.
This was a game where Eli Brooks kind of saves the offense a little bit too. This was a great game for him because you're going against a team with not a lot of size. So.
He's the only guy who's consistently hitting threes.
So he goes 4 for 10 from beyond the arc. Hits both of his shots when he ventures inside of it. Gets to the line a little bit. Has another block in this game.
Man.
Well, now I'm just questioning their whole definition of the word block.
And two steals. So, maybe another rake down situation. I'm not sure.
4 assists, which is not terrible. And, that's kind of what you're needing to see a little bit from him. I mean, even a little bit for this year, but for next year, someone's going to have to initiate the offense.
For next year, you're hoping that Josh Christopher is...
Is the point guard?
Well, he's the...
The lead guard.
The lead guard.
Okay.
And then Brooks can... I think Brooks can thrive in a situation where he's the secondary initiator and gets a lot of open threes.
This is also a game where they did a nice job of spreading out the passing a little bit. John Teske also gets three assists because Nebraska is doubling the post against everybody who gets a touch in the post.
I kind of felt like, so he had a couple buckets early and then he only had 3 shots at halftime. And I felt like the doubling was kind of getting in his head a little bit and he was frustrated by it. And then in the second half, they open up with 3 or 4 John's post-ups back-to-back.
Yeah, they were clearly a little frustrated with Teske's lack of aggression, but at the same time, he finishes 4 for 7 from the field. He has 3 assists. He only has 1 turnover.
But the 4 for 7 is... Remember, we're going up against Nebraska.
That's fair, but, you've got Brandon John scoring 16. He goes 4 for 5 from 2. There's only so many buckets to go around.
And then because of the personnel issues in this game, C.J. Baird gets 8 minutes. In which he is 1 rebound away from an 8 trillion.
You really got to let someone else grab that, CJ.
I think, didn't he knock it off of someone and out of bounds?
Yeah, it wasn't even a rebound that he secured.
Yeah, they shouldn't have credited him for that.
It was a team rebound.
It was close to a team rebound. And then Adrian Nunez goes 1 of 6 from 3. Now has a career mark of 22% from 3.
He made one.
He made one.
He also hit the side of the backboard with 1.
From the corner.
He hit the backboard from the corner. I think I messed this up in prep. It wasn't the side of the backboard, but he managed to hit the backboard on a corner three, which is, how do you do that?
It's difficult.
And so no Cole Bajma.
Which at this point I assume means that they have mutually decided that it is redshirt time.
And you've looked up the rule?
So I was wrong that – so the second half of the season doesn't mean January. It means game 18 and beyond. Bajma's been in 7 games. So he can redshirt if he gets injured, and he doesn't play again. So,
and documenting injuries seems to be something that teams can do very easily.
Yeah, my only thing is
don't you want him out there over Nunez?
Or Baird.
Baird I actually understood a little bit in this game because you lost your 2 primary defensive communicators, and you just needed somebody out there who knew what the heck they were doing and could talk to people.
Okay.
Also, the level of competition, he's probably not super overwhelmed.
Yeah, when you're going against this year's version of Nebraska, you can have a walk-on out there.
it's just my thing is like, okay, if he's redshirting and there are meaningful minutes available in it on a team that just like played CJ Baird for 8 minutes against Nebraska and had 6 minutes, 8 minutes in total of 1 through 4 backup time against Rutgers, then yeah, that does not bode well.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it being Bajema's decision, in which case I think it bodes a little bit better in terms of, you know, he's looking at this year and going, at best, I'm getting spot minutes. And, you know, he can trade that off for a fifth year where he can get more than that.
Or go to grad school.
Yeah. I mean, so you're giving yourself some options there. And I'd be surprised if Juwan Howard decided that his preferred option was to have CJ Baird playing in a Big Ten game in the first half.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it seems like this was probably more of a mutual thing based on what they think is best for Cole in the future.
And he is skinny and young, so like...
It makes sense for, like, you know, when we were entering the season and expecting Michigan to have a little bit more depth, you know, a redshirt was something that came up even before the year. So I generally don't like redshirts on non-centers, but it makes a little bit of sense in Bajma's case because he's very skinny.
I'm still a little skeptical.
You know, it's not the best sign.
Yeah.
What's your ideal retirement age? Are you saving and investing enough to reach your goals? Are you on track to pay off your mortgage before retirement? How much income do you really need in retirement? I'm Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner, founder, and president at
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. When clients walk out the door after a planning meeting, they know exactly what their needs are and where they stand relative to their goals. In my experience, most advisors don't do any planning at all. So my guess is now is the perfect time for a second opinion. And you can book your second opinion online at peakwm.com.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Say, do you like clickbait? Do you like articles that take about 5 minutes and zero knowledge to write? Well, you listen to this podcast, and you probably read MGO Blog, which means you don't, and it's probably time to get that Athletic subscription. I'm going to get you 40% off. Just listen in. The Athletic is a subscription-based sports news site delivering in-depth sports coverage for diehard fans. You read exclusive stories on Michigan football by Nick Baumgartner and Austin Meek, Michigan basketball by Brendan Quinn, national stories from writers you know like Bruce Feldman, Stuart Mandel, and Seth Davis. There's no ads, no pop-ups, no clickbait. The Athletic is setting a new standard for sports news coverage. You can join today for Wolverines content you won't find anywhere else and get 40% off your annual subscription by going to theathletic.com/mgoblog. Again, that's athletic.com/mgoblog.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
$110,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics within alumni online communities. It's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
Time's gone inside out. Time gets to start it with. There's a tense gravity.
won't be their soldier. There's intense gravity.
Hey, Dave, I need you to be redder, hotter than the crowd at a Michigan home game at St. John's Arena. That's in Columbus. I'm at Michigan State Square Garden. Madison Square Garden.
That was great.
This segment has broken you, man.
So to get the voice that way, I got to turn off large portions of my brain.
I mean, that's how sports radio does it, man. How do you think they get through those like 3 hour long shows?
You raise your hands and then you start shaking.
You can only use so much of your brain at once, while also making those noises.
I hope Fuego Box appreciates the sacrifice I make for them on a weekly basis.
Your effort is...
We're just like burning brain cells.
Your effort is Rutgers on defense levels.
Bursting blood thank sockets.
Someone compared me to Rutgers, and I said, thank you. Weird year.
Really strange.
Sweet, there's my hot take. We are in.
Ace, I need your hottest take. Michigan should play all of their home games at neutral sites.
I said that last week.
Go on a barnstorming tour of NBA arenas.
I mean...
barnstorming is good.
I mean, I'd feel bad for the students. Everybody else in the lower bowl.
Whatever. Yeah. They know my thoughts on them.
Yeah.
But Michigan has now won 10 games in a row at Madison Square Garden. That's more games than they've won in a row at Chrysler Arena. That's for sure. Chrysler Center, that's for sure.
Well, this year.
They've won 10 or so. This one.
Yeah, this was the 10th.
They won like the preseason NIT at one point. They won the Big Ten tournament when it was there. Mm-hmm. Like 7.
Yeah. They played Penn State a couple of years.
Yeah, they played Penn State in the previous iteration of this weird wrestling basketball.
It was hockey then.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
And they also won hockey.
Two sports in one shot thing.
They won the actual NIT some years ago. Oh, but then they lost it, so okay. That ended that streak.
Yeah, no, this is all pretty recent. I think this would have all been
10 in a row. Well, that's impressive.
Yeah. So, and you know, obviously they've done pretty well in, you know, tournament settings recently. Mm-hmm. I would say that maybe you know, given the kind of lack of home court advantage of Chrysler, the fact that Michigan got like a nice like home whistle in Madison Square Garden against Rutgers, even with the crowd being like probably 65-35 Rutgers fans.
Yeah.
Rutgers did go to their third string center at some point.
Yeah, maybe it's time to
Mamadou Doucouré.
And you know, you get that bump. You get that neutral site bump. So, you know, that you know, you might get some quadrant one wins that you weren't expecting.
Quality hot take. Plausible, impossible.
Dave, I need your hottest take. Michigan baseball is going to have the best season of any major sport on campus.
Okay, that was more of like a pirate voice.
Well, I've done British, so I...
He's working on it. He's finding his range.
Checking boxes.
Checking boxes. It kind of sounded like he was on a pirate ship. Michigan baseball is going to have the best season of any of the... So that means that they...
I mean, which it kind of makes a little bit of sense when you think about it.
Tournaments.
But...
Isn't women's gymnastics really good this year?
Well, that I meant of like the four majors.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they have like, they're good at other things.
Yeah.
But of like your four major sports.
Well, what softball is probably more important than baseball. Yeah.
Okay. So, softball is generally included in the four major sports.
We put a slash between baseball and softball.
Okay. We're slashing it.
I think so.
All right.
I mean, because you can't leave hockey out.
Yeah. I mean, hockey in terms of attendance, like, you know.
Okay. The point is that Michigan baseball is like going to probably be pretty good. They're ranked top 10. They're coming off of obviously one of their best seasons in my lifetime.
Pitching coach who MLB teams are trying to hire away.
And other sports are slightly underperforming to what we would like their expectations to be.
That's funny because mine is actually
Chris Fetter is going to win a national championship at Michigan.
I don't know if it's going to be as a pitching coach.
Yeah.
But when Eric Bocich retires,
Chris Fetters is going to be here that long?
No,
Bosch is rather young.
Bring him back, right?
Yeah, I'm talking about like decades in the future or when he gets hired away by someone, which is probably more likely.
Is Denard going to be their starting right fielder?
No.
It might be that
long. Oh, you mean my son?
Yeah.
No, he's not going to play baseball.
Oh, he's not?
Daddy doesn't watch baseball that kids play. That's not going to happen.
So is that kind of how his interests are developed, is what you like?
I'm not going to let my kid play baseball. It's too dangerous.
It's too dangerous.
That's what you're going to go with?
It's too dangerous to my sanity.
Hey.
Good clarification, because they start him off with T-ball. It's very, very soft balls that they use.
Brian just won the hot take segment until he saved it.
What?
Baseball being the most dangerous.
You can get hit by the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
A lot of other sports, you can get hit by the human.
Do you remember Dizzy Dean? Huh?
I do not.
Nobody here who's alive remembers Dizzy Dean.
I do hang out with Craig Ross, but I don't think I look like him just yet.
I mean, it's dangerous. They're throwing balls at people. You only got one helmet? Come on.
On the team?
I mean, per person.
Okay.
Actually, playing peewee baseball, like youth baseball, we did only have like two or three helmets team, and then you
just kind of
swap them out.
If the bases were loaded, it just kind of sucks to go.
So, like watching little kids play soccer is hilarious because they all follow the ball.
It's magnet ball. It's great.
Right, yeah, it's great. But like watching little kids play baseball, it's just like they're just standing there.
But your son's going to be good.
No, he's not.
Yeah, we should do a gimmicky top five of worst children's sports.
Yeah, that sounds like very uplifting.
I think baseball is number one, and then hockey is number two because little kids can't skate.
Basketball is way up there because kids can't shoot.
Yeah. What sport is not up there?
Soccer is good, yeah. Rugby.
Actually, the closer you get to scrum, the better the game is.
Actually, Pop Warner is pretty watchable. You got these kids with the huge helmets and the huge shoulder pads who could barely balance.
Kind of fall over a lot.
Yeah.
Except you're watching it the whole time like, oh no, those tiny brains.
They can't hurt each other at that age.
I don't know if science backs you up on that. I'm going to be honest.
Like, how much force is one kid going to take?
Brian's parenting segment is what we need to do more of in the future, I think.
I don't know.
Ace doesn't want to get sued. He wants to keep
I don't care about me getting sued. I'm worried about Brian getting CPS called on him.
All I said, I was like,
football can't damage the brains.
It's not like people get like their kids taken away for letting them play football. That's all I said.
That's true. Yeah, you also said how much damage can they do to each other?
How much damage can they do to each other? I'm genuinely asking this.
I think more than you'd expect.
You said a lot of things in this segment so far. We should probably transition to the actual segment.
Big Ten basketball!
But you might want to do the read first.
Oh, right. We're not done with the Fuego Box segment.
So if you'd like to have your spicy takes be as spicy as this segment, get Fuego Box. They'll send you three hot sauces every month. They won't blow you away with mere heat. They're actually tuned for flavor. Go to fuegobox.com/mgoblog. Get $10 off your first order. So Big Ten basketball is as much of a melee as everybody expected it would be.
First place Illinois Fighting Illini!
Nothing symbolizes that better than Wisconsin knocking off Michigan State minus both Kobe King and Brad Davison.
And they will be permanently minus Kobe King now?
Yes, they will be.
Unfortunately, not so much with Brad Davison.
Oh my God. What a crew cut psycho.
He's a cock puncher. that's one of the worst things you can be.
That's true. Like, someone describing me as that, I would not like.
I was trying to think of a lighter way to say it, and then I was like, you know what? He doesn't deserve it to be lightened.
Well, that's not even the worst thing he's done.
That dude goes around hitting dongs.
We don't sugarcoat things.
Okay,
here.
Yeah. I mean, like, the slipping your foot under a guy who's coming down for a rebound is genuinely dirty in a way that could seriously injure somebody. And that is more the worst thing that Brad Davison has done. Although, like, hitting people in the dick is
not good.
Not cool at all.
Yeah, not very, very not cool.
The Clemson linebacker who used to insert his thumbs places in piles was also high on that list, if you ask me.
Yeah, I don't even know if we needed to bring him into this.
All right, let's stop talking about orifices. Orify?
Orify?
I think it's orifices.
And it's continuing.
What? Well, now we're talking about grammar and diction, which is different.
Yeah, Latin. This is a highfalutin podcast.
So
Illinois is in first place in the conference now.
Kind of deserves to be, weirdly.
They played tough teams.
Yeah, they're not like skating by on four games against Northwestern and Nebraska.
Are they the best team that you've seen, like, from the eye test?
I have no idea.
Not necessarily. I'd still say, I mean, yeah, it is like, it changes seemingly by the day, if not the week, but I think still most consistently good teams are Michigan State and Maryland. for Michigan State to lose to Wisconsin when Wisconsin didn't have Kobe King and Brad Davison, it required Xavier Tillman like forgetting how to finish around the basket. He goes 2-for-11 on twos, I believe, in that game.
Didn't Wisconsin only have like 9 fouls called against them too in the entire game?
It was a a weird game. So I still think, I mean, I'm not quite ready to believe Illinois is the best team in the conference. I'll put it that way.
And I kind of am. I mean, so you've got Coburn, who is the equal of anyone in the conference. And then you've got Io, who kind of an erratic shooter, but he is a legitimate alpha dog.
And he's really come on lately.
Yeah, and then you have Trent Frazier, who's a shooter. You know, Georgie B is a backup 5, and then a guy who's a 4 is pretty good. And their problem is, like, you know, they have 6 guys, and then they have nothing.
And also that they can't really shoot.
Right. Yeah. Aside from Frazier, it's just let them go.
And that's the thing that gives me pause about them.
I mean, but the thing is that Coburn is a really consistent source of second chances.
That's true.
So that hurts them a lot less than it would have last year. And they've changed their defensive scheme in a way that, I mean, there was an Athletic article about this that really reminded me of John Beilein. And we're all like, we're Michigan fans, so the most important thing in our world is that Brett Underwood does well. And, you know, I think that he's a good coach, and he's got some players this year, and I think they're going to win the league.
Yeah. They were, and for conference-only numbers last year, they were 11th in defensive efficiency, but first in turnover rate forced. This year, they are second in defensive efficiency and dead last in turnover rate forced. They have completely changed how they play defense. They're not trying to overextend and pressure. And
I mean, they're playing a very similar defense to what Michigan is.
Yeah. I mean, and before they were playing something that, you know, worked in the Big 12, but in the Big 10 where you got teams that really take care of the freaking ball.
I mean, it mostly worked at Stephen F. Austin.
That's true. At Oklahoma State, it was they were kind of in constant shootouts.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a defense that worked on lower levels, but against teams that were more proficient at offense, it kind of hit a wall.
Sort of like Shaka,
I was about to say.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
That sounds like havoc to me.
It's between Illinois and Rutgers for, like, which team has had the most impressive coaching job this year. I think you got to go with Rutgers, yeah. But, like, man.
Yeah, Brad Underwood, like, not getting Coach of the Year in the Big Ten is, like, that's...
It's rough.
But how can you not give it to, like, if Rutgers makes the tournament, Pikel's got to get it.
Pikel's got to get it no matter what happens at this point, like...
Yeah, Rutgers is a top 30 team on KenPom.
And even if you only sniff those heights and then immediately go back to like... Doom. You did it at Rutgers.
Well, don't they have an interesting end to their schedule? I think they have a lot of away games coming up to kind of close the season.
That's true, but they're already 7-4 in the conference, so they have like a decent amount of wiggle room.
So this is the amazing thing about this year's Big Ten, is that KenPom projects 3 teams to tie for the conference title.
At what?
13-7.
Yep.
Well, we were talking something about that probably in the first half of the year, but if Michigan can get to not a lot over 500, you're thinking that's a pretty decent Big Ten record. Obviously, they're probably not going to get there, but it's funny that ended up playing out that way, is now you're not going to have like one or two dominant teams that are walking away from with this conference.
Yeah, I mean, KenPom projects Michigan to get to 9-11.
Along with every other team in the conference except Nebraska and Northwestern.
Yeah.
So you're either going to finish 13-7 or 9-11?
Pretty much.
Somewhere in between. You're going to finish somewhere in between those unless you're one of the two really terrible teams.
And that doesn't, like, if Michigan can get Livers back at some point for, I don't know, the last 6, 7, 8 games of the season, then you'd feel it
a lot better.
Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't account for the fact that Ohio State doesn't have DJ Carton right now. Doesn't account for the fact that Wisconsin lost Kobe King, except for the last game. So I think, you know, if you're adding in all the intangible factors, Michigan should probably expect to at least get to 500 in the league.
We'll see.
I don't know if I'm, like, ready.
I don't know if I'm quite that optimistic until, I mean.
Well, they got the home game against Nebraska. They got an away game against Northwestern, so that's 2. And then they got to get 4 more. So,
yeah.
You know, you got Purdue, Rutgers, Indiana, a couple games against Ohio State.
I'm just not yet sold on them going on the road and winning basically a 50-50 game. I mean, maybe.
They just did.
True.
Yeah.
They got to do it again at the rack.
And you're right. If, like, if Livers comes back, that's a little bit different. But
well, and we've been talking about the 3-point shooting gap Michigan has been dealing with this whole year.
And that's a lot of it has to be bad luck.
Yeah, I mean, we saw what happened with Rutgers where they shot 25%. Well, they shoot 30%.
Yeah.
So they had a little bit of bad luck in that game, but
that's okay. not really even.
Yeah, not really even, because Michigan is a really good team at contesting three-pointers. Like, one of the makes was over a heavy Wagner contest, and that guy's got super long, crazy Gumby arms, and like, he was disgusted after that shot went down, and so was I.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a gauntlet. I don't know. I mean,
it is a gauntlet, but you gotta, I mean.
And everyone's kind of the same. So you're just kind of taking shots at each other, and
hockey and basketball are like having identical seasons in terms
like
of
the Big Ten conferences. Yeah. No, I mean, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, two more games against Ohio State can be good, and given where they're going, it could also be bad if they like figure things out. Although, depending on how long Carton's out, that could be.
I mean,
tough
you
for them.
You look at the number, it's like this team's 12th in KenPom, and then you go flip over to their page, and they're like, ooh.
Like, look at the results of these games.
So how do you feel about Tuesday? Do you feel coming off of this weekend, and then like with the Carton news? I mean, Wesson's had a bit of a resurgence this year, but they are not necessarily turning that into a lot of wins.
Yeah, I mean, Wesson has always seemed like the kind of guy who's a good matchup for Teske, because he's, and I don't know if this version of Wesson.
But he's stepping out now, right?
I was about to say, this year's version might be a tough cover, and we haven't seen, I mean, the last couple games has not featured a post score that Teske's had to defend. So, I mean, we haven't really seen him.
Game two against Coburn, he did a really good job.
That's true.
And historically, Wesson has not had a great time with
well, Teske. This is a different size.
His last game against Michigan last year, he was 3-for-10 on two-pointers.
If he steps out and hits a couple threes, I think.
Which is what he did last year.
Yeah.
Michigan's going to have to live with it, right?
Like, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you probably, I mean, the problem is he's hitting 41% of his threes. So, like, I mean, it's not on a huge volume.
Well, yeah, what's his volume, though?
I mean, he's taken 68 this year. He's taken 35 in 10 Big Ten games and hits 40% of them.
So it's essentially a coin flip, right, on KenPom?
So he's going to hit one or two, probably, based on that rate. So you're going to live with that.
I guess you're going to have to deal with that. And he's only shooting 47% on twos this year. It's actually gone up a tick in conference play, but that does seem like something where Teske should be able to hold
up. I wonder if
losing
that weight actually hurt his ability to bowl his way to the basket.
Yeah, I mean, that is the lowest two-point figure of his career by a decent margin.
That's far out, man.
So, yeah, I do wonder if he's losing a little bit of that burl has hurt him a little bit, although he still gets the line a lot, and I think that's the area where Teske's going to have to be really careful is if that becomes a Wesson Austin Davis matchup, feeling less good about it.
Yeah.
But like, as we mentioned earlier, Ohio State will be without DJ Carton because he has stepped away from the team for an indefinite amount of time due to mental health stuff, which I was impressed with how forthcoming he was about that and how accommodating Ohio State was. But that's a big hole for them, even though he's been pretty turnover prone this year. He's also easily their best perimeter scoring option.
And Beilein wanted him from early on.
Yeah. Extremely talented.
He's a guy that Michigan has wanted to get for a while.
I mean, he's their second highest usage guy behind Wesson. He's a 25% usage guy as a freshman. So, you know, he's
canning 40% of his threes, and those are often with a certain degree of difficulty that, say, Wesson's are not.
He's a big miss for them. So, and then you look at their overall stats, and the thing that they're best at is shooting threes. I mean, yeah, on offense.
Yeah.
And Michigan, even though they are getting absolutely torched,
they are great at limiting those attempts.
They're great at limiting attempts. And I think that the reason they're getting torched on threes is just bad luck. So that looks like a good matchup for Michigan. And then, you know, they have a really good two-point defense, and we'll see how that works out in terms of, you know, Michigan.
In conference, that hasn't been nearly as good.
Yeah, but also they're in Michigan's bucket in conference in terms of, like, how are these teams hitting all these threes on us?
They're actually worse.
Yeah. So it's it's a make-or-miss league, right?
Although at least there is some yes, that is very true. I have to acknowledge that because that's an NBA thing. But they're much worse at Michigan at preventing three-point attempts.
Yeah.
So there is their horrible number makes a little bit more sense than Michigan's.
It's true.
But I see that as a pretty pliable game. Like, I don't know. It's
home. You got a little momentum.
The livers and carton absences kind of cancel each other out in a way.
Yeah.
Because it really hurts Ohio State's backcourt depth, too. They're not super deep in terms of ball handlers. So that limits them kind of in a similar way to the way Livers' absence limits Michigan.
Yeah, and you've had a historical advantage in this matchup at center. I don't know if that's going to last. We've seen Luka Garza kind of shoot past Teske. But it doesn't seem like Caleb Wesson has actually made a big step forward, at least as an offensive player. He's shooting more threes, but if he's worse from the block, then...
It's canceling itself out a little bit, especially in conference play where that finishing inside takes on a little bit more importance a lot of the time.
Well, I mean, in this league, in this year, you've got... I mean, everybody who rolls into town has got at least a fringe NBA big, it seems like.
That's true. Yeah, I'll be really interested also to see, because they kind of have a bunch of hustle guys, the four, so this seems like a good game for Brandon Johns just to kind of continue getting dirty a little bit. Probably a chance for him to be able to step out and knock down some more shots against guys who are going to be more inclined to keep a foot near the paint.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big test because, like, Kyle Young is very much just to, like, hang around and hit the glass guy.
Yes.
And that's going to be his primary matchup. So I kind of like the way this game shakes out matchup-wise for Michigan, because Ohio State is pretty small in the backcourt, so they're not going to be able to take advantage of Michigan's smaller backcourt defenders like Rutgers was trying to do or was doing on both ends a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you just need Johns and Wagner to continue to be options, to be efficient options on offense. Especially because once that starts happening, you know, Brooks starts getting the kind of open looks that he needs if he's going to have a positive impact.
Can be three lie again.
Right. Like he's when he goes 4-10 against Nebraska. All right. Now he's a functional offensive player. When he tries to get in the lane with that floater and that floater is like a 20% shot. Right.
Yeah.
Like when it goes down, you're like, ooh, bonus.
But this will be nice because Ohio State has like their guards all run 6'3" or shorter. So get some clean looks.
DeJulius can play again?
Yeah, DeJulius can play.
Well, we'll see what happens with Carton out, but they do occasionally play some three-guard lineups as well.
Yeah.
They'll play Dwayne Washington at the three a little bit, or Luther Muhammad.
We're going to take a break, come back, and discuss the hockey team.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Is your online store sluggish, outdated, underperforming? You may be suffering from chronic crappy website disorder. One in three online stores built by your brother's friend's nephew currently suffers from chronic crappy website. But now, there's hope. Introducing Human Element. Huel has helped hundreds suffering from CCW to turn their online stores around, creating fast, secure, and engaging online experiences that turn visitors into customers and put products back at the top of their search engine game.
Before Huel, I had abandoned carts, browser errors, and poorly animated GIFs. Now, with Huel, I can focus on what I'm actually good at, running my business.
Jeffrey, would you be a deer and pull the Ferrari around?
Side effects may include increased traffic, customer conversions, better ROI, compliments, elation, and early retirement. Why live with the disappointment of chronic crappy website disorder? Speak to your Human Element consultant today to see if Huel is right for you.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're gonna win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics within Alumni Online communities. It's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
I came too far for tears, not gonna cry. I told the devil, you can hurt him, can't make him die. Yeah, you're hurting now, but one day, God's gonna make you laugh. I'm a child of God, and I know he won't turn his back.
So Michigan gets a home split against Ohio State, which is not the worst result, but since they're in a hole, it's not good enough for them to climb towards the tournament, really. Even though Ohio State is above them in the pairwise rankings, they didn't really get enough traction to do anything meaningful.
So they won on Friday, and
yeah.
They didn't move at all in pairwise, which yeah. I thought was, I guess maybe everyone around them also won, and so it was maybe bad luck in terms of, you know, well, no one actually moves because everyone did the same thing. Well,
pairwise is basically a slightly modified RPI at this point.
Yeah.
So, like, they just have to get their RPI up, and home games are kind of underweighted relative to road
That's
games.
Right. That's right.
So it wasn't a huge surprise. I thought they might move up a spot or two, and now it's, I mean, they're kind of in the same spot.
Yeah.
Are they literally in the same spot? I haven't checked.
I honestly hadn't checked either. So the thing about Friday was, like, they did a lot of the things that I thought that they needed to do, and they continue to do from the past couple of weeks, where, I mean, they scored, what, three times on even strength and pretty much controlled the play, controlled the puck, and, you know, got the downfall ended up being on special teams, which is kind of what we talked about is like, you know, they can't, Ohio State has a good power play and they can't give them too many chances. And some of the penalties, you know, it was tough because I was talking to a couple guys in the box who play hockey and I said, you know, are those legit calls? Because a lot of them are in the offensive end and it's kind of a forechecker kind of going at a guy trying to force a turnover and a guy falls down. Well, maybe the guy's not a good skater. You know, a couple times I thought, I don't know. But you know, Michigan ended up taking five penalties, giving a good power play, a lot of opportunities. Ohio State scored a couple goals. But other than that, you know, they couldn't really do anything.
No,
I didn't think.
I mean, they outshot Ohio State, was it like 16-7 in the first period?
That was in the second game. That was yesterday.
I mean, they had a big shot advantage on the Friday game, the whole game.
Yeah, I mean, they had a big shot advantage. They generally had a Corsi advantage. I mean, they had the puck. They had the opportunities. They just kind of lost it. In other ways, like they on special teams on Friday and then Saturday, the first period, five odd man rushes, and I was like,
yeah.
I don't know that they had gave up five odd man rushes since Christmas, aside from yesterday's game. Like in total, like they'd been very disciplined and had not really gotten caught out of position. And yesterday, the first period, the first even 5-10 minutes was just like, what is going on? This,
yeah.
I haven't seen this in a while.
And Ohio State scores on a 3-on-2 that they execute well.
Yeah, that was really well done.
Michigan had a 3-on-2 later in the period where they didn't even get a shot off. And it was just like,
kind of. It was right on the fringe of a. I didn't count it, but.
There was an opportunity there.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, they'll be better at this next year.
Well, I mean, that could be. But then Saturday, you know, they take those two major penalties and you were upset about this.
So, the first one, I didn't get to see actually what Beecher did. But we're talking about Will Lockwood being bent backwards over the Ohio State bench.
Cross-checked.
Cross-checked in the face.
Yeah.
And that gets a 2-minute minor.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lockwood gets
a matching one for Lockwood.
That's some coward refereeing right there.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe Beecher deserved the major. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's one guy who started that, and that's Ohio State's captain. And for him to get 2 minutes when he's the guy who's making the game go out of control, it's not just cowardly, it's stupid. Because if you want the game to be chippy, then that's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
So I just don't – I mean, that guy needed at least an extra 2 and probably should have been booted. Like, the thing he was doing to Lockwood in the bench is dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, period. And it's a completely wanton. It's not even part of the play.
No, I mean, almost all that stuff was pretty much after the whistle-ish.
Things. Lockwood came up for a hit, and then the whistle blew, and then everything blew up because people were mad at him for giving a couple people hits.
And then later in the game, Van Wy gets – it looked like – well, they called it charging, went to the box, reviewed it, and it looked like he, I guess, supposedly made contact to the head. So I didn't see the review.
He gets hit from behind, and he lifts up because someone else hit him. And then they kick him out for contact to the head. And that, to me, wasn't even 2 minutes. Like, that was a joke. That call was a joke.
So then Michigan spends pretty much half the second period
killing a penalty.
Yeah.
Doing a really good job of it. But.
Oh, yeah. We talk about Friday. Then their penalty kill was actually okay because the one goal was, it was a deflection off a loose, I think. The second one was a better goal. But then they did, like you said, they did a good job actually on the PK in the second game, but when you're down two centers, you're down 10 minutes of even strength time because those are not like, oh, we give up a goal, even though they didn't. It's you're just killing for half the period.
And you can't score.
No.
So, like, you're taking away, like, a quarter of the time you have to score in the last two periods, and you're kicking out Michigan's top two centers. It's just like...
And I didn't... And you know, I was talking to Bailey, and she's like, I don't think Mike Pastrachop's on the bench in the third period.
Oh, that's right.
And so they were down literally a whole line for the third period. And they actually played really well, had chances. I thought Napier played pretty well. He didn't have to make any, like, game savers, but he was generally in the right position. He's a big goalie, so he generally, if you can make him move, you can beat him. If you can't, you generally aren't going to get a lot past him from what I've seen of him the last probably 5 or 6 games he's played against Michigan. And Michigan just couldn't do it as much. They also went 0 for the weekend on the power play, which, I mean, you got to, you know, that was one of the things that kind of kept them in it against Notre Dame and Penn State is they got power play goals in every game, and they did not
you just
get one.
Expect that power play to connect.
I mean, should you expect them to just never score?
No, but I mean, it's just if they don't score on the power play when they've got, you know, Jimmy Lambert, a guy who's got probably 10 points in his Michigan career on the top power play, it's not like that's a surprise.
Okay, but I mean, honestly, I thought Lambert had a good game on Saturday.
He did.
He drove the net well. He was dishing. He was moving the puck.
Scored a goal. He scored the goal.
Well, I think it actually went off Becker, but
okay. Yeah.
But he drove play.
But the larger point is, like, they don't have – if they get the puck across to a one-timer, that one-timer is probably going into the boards, right? It's not going to the top corner.
So, you know, both games are kind of similar in the sense that Michigan plays the way that they normally do in terms of controlling the play. They're very disciplined, at least positionally, on Friday. Saturday, they're not. And they give up those odd man rushes. And then they get kind of unlucky on the first goal, I thought. Ohio State scores like a minute into the game on this kind of very slow, never leaves the ice shot that just kind of somehow navigates through I don't know how many skates and just inside the post. And it was kind of like, oh, that's really not what they needed to start the game.
No.
And then they break down defensively.
It was a bad goal. Like, we can say it. Straussman has given up a bad goal.
Do you think
year.
He saw that?
I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, you got to be on the post, right? Like
the far post?
I mean,
I don't know.
you got to know where it's going at some point.
I didn't think that was on him, but so it's unfortunate because they've come a long way and dug themselves out of a relatively big hole, and they really needed that second win this weekend, and just
the tie
kind of weren't consistent enough.
Well, so that's, I mean, they were bad for about 10 minutes at a hockey game.
Yeah.
And they ended up down 2-0 and they couldn't get out. And part of that was the fact that they
got
two majors that in different ways were complete horseshit. And the other half is just like, we get down at a 2-goal deficit with this team, you don't expect to climb out of it.
Especially when you don't have literally the people.
Right. I mean,
And losing Beecher is like, so it was weird because he goes off the ice and you're just like, oh, that's probably their most dynamic player. But then after that, after they kill that penalty, like Yost is alive and Michigan turns sort of the ice the other way and gets a goal, almost ties it a couple times. And then in the third, the same thing happens. And they don't have the on-ice talent in that sense because they're running out of people and their best skaters off the ice. But they're getting chances, and the environment is great. And then, you know, Summers has just kind of that unfortunate play at the blue line, which was exactly what happened, 3 months ago in Columbus, where they had the game tied 1-1, and he took a downing into the guy in front of him, and they lost it on 2-on-1 going the other way.
Yeah, I mean, the...
You could just see him on the bench, and he just looked dead. Like, he had his face on the boards, just bent over. I mean, he couldn't believe it. And at least it's just too bad for the kid because, I mean, two times against that team is just like... Ugh.
At least in that case, like, it was a risk that he had to take.
No, yeah. I mean, you never want that to happen. You're trying to make a play. It's just that, you know, then that's two odd man rushes they get goals on, and that's, you know, two-thirds of their scoring. And so they have Wisconsin coming in next week. Wisconsin hasn't won a game. They didn't beat Minnesota this past weekend. They're games that you would think Michigan's probably the favorite in.
They got it. They have no room for error. They got
very little at this point. Yeah. Yep.
They can lose like two more games and get in that large bid before the end of the season. So this is home against Wisconsin, you got to sweep.
Yep. And Minnesota just did. So, you know, and they also didn't get a lot of help from the teams around them in terms of Big Ten standings because Minnesota and Notre Dame both had very good weekends. So the weird thing is had they won last night, they would have been 5 points out of first and they would have been like had a chance to win the league.
Sure.
Because, you know, you're less than a weekend away. But looked good one game, did something second game, but just too many breakdowns. And
I mean, they had some breakdowns early. And they're out shooting, out possessing, out chancing the opponent.
Yeah, because they don't give up a lot of bad looks. Again, other than in transition yesterday, but you know they hadn't given up that many bad looks in transition in
a long time.
It's been maybe even this year that many.
And that's just probably some of it's puck luck and that kind of stuff.
No, that you're probably right. And, and Ohio State did a good job finishing that one. Like, that goal was legitimate. That's how you set it up and hit a trailer and how skaters move. And that's the other thing is Michigan doesn't really do that. I mean, they had some odd man rushes on Friday, including an out-of-the-box breakaway from Morgan and didn't score. And they, you know, they don't really take advantage of those. And Ohio State...
They don't even attempt to pass across on two-on-ones.
It's a little befuddling. These seem like easy, fundamental plays, but...
They're not good. They're average. And that's what average guys do with the puck on their stick. Like, I mean, just watching Bortolo play for the national team, I was just like, oh, that's right.
This is a different level of hockey player.
This is what happens when you have guys who are, like, really elite. And Michigan doesn't have any of those guys.
Like, no.
Maybe Beecher will get there. But not yet, and hopefully.
No, but they've fixed some stuff on structurally on the penalty kill. They gave up one on Saturday that was a good goal, or Friday that was a good goal. But they fixed some defensive stuff. Goaltending is obviously, you know, elite, I think.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, that's something that Mel said even last year is he's like, hey, in order for this like team, this program to get better, it needs to start in net and work its way out. And, you know, through the next year plus, you can see where that has happened. Now, it hasn't kind of spread to the front of the team in terms of scoring goals and maybe even on the power play, but, you know, they have fixed a number of things. And, you know, even Friday, I thought they did a good job generating chances, and they had a couple guys finish, and they won on even strength.
Yeah.
So there are positive signs. It just, they might have the hole might be a little deep from that process in the first half of the year.
Yeah, and as I was saying last week, I feel like the basketball team is a very close analogy to the hockey team, where it's like you see the things that are happening, and you're like, okay, this is good structurally.
Yeah,
Michigan's getting open shots or scoring opportunities or forcing bad shots, or
yep,
and they're just not getting rewarded because they don't have the talent level.
Yep.
So, you know, this second half I still think is encouraging. I felt like this weekend, even though it didn't move Michigan closer to a tourney bid, a bid is overall encouraging for the whole program.
Ohio State's a good team. I mean, they're not a high-end talent team in terms of, like, overwhelm you with guys, but they're very sound. They do things really well. They don't really go outside of what they're capable of, and, you know, that has paid off for them a lot this year. They were 10th in pairwise coming in, and, you know, they dropped a little bit, obviously, with that loss on Friday, but they got a win on Saturday then, and they're going to be a tournament team. And, you know, to be able to outskate them except for your own sort of breakdowns is a positive. I mean, they did that to Penn State, who also team probably going to be in the tournament on the road in that sense. So there are strides being made, but, you know, you just had to finish a few more games, I think, early on, and you wouldn't be in this sort of dire straits.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to the MCO podcast. I am A. Sandbender, along with Brian Cook and Dave Masternak. I am doing this outro in one take because this is a very professional podcast.
Should have kept the first take.